Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Pro Medicus PME full year results briefing. All participants are in listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question via the phone, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via webcast, please enter it into the Ask a Question box and click Submit. I would now like to hand the conference over to Dr. Sam Hupert, CEO. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for joining us for this results briefing. As most of you know, Pro Medicus is a healthcare IT company specialising in enterprise imaging and radiology information systems. We work in three jurisdictions: Melbourne, our corporate headquarters; Berlin, our R&D centre for Visage products; and the US, where we have an office in San Diego, where we our biggest market, and staff located throughout the US that travel towards clients. I think the important thing is we are a technology-focused company with over 40 software engineers and support staff. In terms of our product set, we have two products: Visage RIS, which was our core product before 2009. It deals with all the practice management, billing, scheduling for large radiology corporations. The key market for that product is here in Australia. And on the right, Visage 7, which is the clinical desktop that radiologists use to call up, enhance, manipulate, and diagnose images electronically. In terms of the results, I think we're very pleased that all of our headline numbers headed in the right direction. Revenue, despite quite significant currency headwinds, was still up 19.5%, and profit after tax over 33%. I think the other pleasing numbers were the cash and investments, now just a touch under 62 million, up 42%, and the company remains debt-free. As a result, we have increased our dividend this year, so 15 cents a share fully franked, including the half year. So the full year amount was 15 cents. So all in all, we felt that pretty much all of our key metrics are headed in a positive direction. In terms of setting ourselves up for the year and for future years, 21 was the biggest year in terms of new sales in our company history. Just prior to the beginning of the year, we had won the Northwestern deal in Chicago, but starting after that, clearly six key deals, five in the US and one in Europe, with a number of key academics plus a mixture of non-academics such as MedStar and Intermountain. So by any measure, it was our busiest year, most probably the busiest sales period in our industry in total. In terms of where we sit, this is an interesting slide. There is a bake-off called Best Hospitals US News every year. And on the left, you see where the various clients landed in the top 20. As you'll see now, we have 9 out of the top 20 using our products, over double our nearest competitor. So certainly we are making an impact in some of the most well-known hospitals and health systems in the US. In terms of the revenue splits, many of you have seen this bar chart before. I think the key thing is that on the right-hand side, in the orange pink, the transaction revenue grew, and in numbers grew even more. As I said, we had some tailwinds with currency, which have now abated to some degree. But total revenue in pretty much all of the sections increased during the year. We've put in a new section to show the archive migrations, which is the work we do when we get an archive contract in transferring the data from the previous system to our system. So we're now showing that revenue separately, and that came in largely from MedStar and Intermountain, that not only took our viewer but also took our archive. In terms of the operational model, again, we think it is proving that it is a very good model for us. It is very fine-grained. We have the minimums which underpin our contract value, and that's how we announce the contracts. And I think the important thing is the client grows, so do we, because we charge for every additional test that they do. I think the key figure on this slide is that the forward revenue increased from, I think, around $270 million when we last announced it to $320 million. This is a five-year window, so if a contract is 7 years, the final 2 years are not taken into this account. And I think it just shows the growth of our base as we add each contract on top of the ones that we have already in place. As mentioned, we had a 16% year-on-year increase in terms of transactions. It would have been 28% on a constant currency basis. We also believe the first quarter was mildly impacted by the tail end of COVID. The trough that occurred in exam numbers was really around the March-April timeframe in 2020. But towards the end of the year, we still weren't quite where we were pre-COVID, but we were getting closer. So there was that first quarter in particular was less than the normal 100%. But pleasingly, we were able to make not only that delta up, but obviously increase transaction numbers in a positive way from there. We are telling the market that we expect this growth to be a step change or a step growth in FY22. We now have Northwestern, NYU, MedStar and others that were implemented in the last fiscal year, particularly towards the end, will now give 12 months of revenue each of those, which will be quite material because they're quite large implementations. And we also anticipate additional revenue coming from those sites coming that we've already announced in the first half, Intermountain, which is large, two UC campuses and New Vermont. So that plus growth in existing clients, we are seeing organic growth across the industry has returned. There is some M&A where our clients are acquiring smaller sites, and all that adds to the mix. And then I think the other area of upside is as clients adopt our new products, particularly Open Archive and Worklist, they are also transaction-based. So we will see them contribute to the total of transactions going forward into FY22. In terms of professional services, many of you have seen the slide. It is around project planning, training and implementation. I think the new point on this one, the data migration as part of an archive sale, which we showed in the bar chart of revenue, those fees are once-off, whereas all of the other professional services are spread evenly across the life of the contract. So more of an annuity style revenue rather, whereas data migration is a once-off. In terms of operating leverage, clearly this is an important thing for us. I think we have proved that the offering is highly scalable. Our revenue has increased significantly more than any of our cost base. We do not have CapEx. We don't sell hardware. It's a software-only model, a true SaaS model. Training and installation from the time that we sign the contract is all charged as professional services. So we believe the business has high operating leverage and the margin has continued to grow as the footprint increases. We did have a significant step up in the margins in the first half. That has continued into the second half. We believe some of that is because of reduced cost pace, because of COVID, less travel, conferences being virtual rather than in person. And some of those costs will come back, but we still believe that we will be able to maintain our margins higher than they were this time last year. So somewhere in between where they are now and where they were this time last year. But clearly that needs to play out still. In terms of COVID, We were able to transition to work from home 100% in all jurisdictions in mid-March 2020. We have been operating at 100% capacity globally. Our sales and marketing efforts continued throughout. And as I said, we had our busiest sales period ever. I think a lot of that's got to do with the thinness of our technology, that we're able to demonstrate it very readily through the internet. In large-scale demonstrations and in full diagnostic quality. And I think that sets the tone for a lot of the opportunity going forward, because clearly there's a lot of work from home. Radiologists had to pivot back in March, April last year, and even though the US has come back in most parts to near normal in terms of, you know, on-site presence, it's never quite got back to the full on-site presence that it used to be, much like most of the industries here. So being able to work from home on demand, seamlessly on demand, is a huge plus. And as I mentioned, exam volumes are now back at or in some cases above pre-COVID levels. So all in all, we were not impacted negatively by COVID other than a few months when exam volumes dropped. That was more around the March-April timeframe, but now it's back to business as usual. In terms of our product set, Visage RIS, as mentioned, this is used by largely in Australia. We do have some clients in Canada that use it. It is a highly localised product. The key thing for us is it is progressing well. We are progressing well with our two key contracts with healthcare imaging services, used to be primary healthcare and IMED. Since we last updated the market, the Helios rollout is now complete. So that's fully up and running, and that's a transaction-based model. We are seeing some upside in the IMED contract because of their M&A and growth, increased market interest in some new opportunities. So we clearly believe in RIS in Australia, we are the undisputed market leader, so that's a good position to be in for that product. In terms of Visage 7, many of you have seen this slide before. It's what makes us, we believe, you know, the best and most differentiated product in the market. The three key tenets of number one in speed, functionality and scalability. And I think with the implementations that we've done even over the last 12 months, I think this proves these three key differentiators between us and others. One of the things that is driving a change in the market, and we are seeing increased interest and people changing their systems. Many of you would have heard me say this is the massive explosion in data, the new imaging equipment creating larger and larger data sets. That trend is continuing unabated, and the traditional methodology of legacy systems, compress and send, where they take the file, compress it as much as they can, send it down the network to a pretty beefy workstation at the other end that has a lot of software on it that then uncompresses the file and the radiologist then manipulates the file. That methodology is now cracking at the seams because the files are just getting too big, regardless of the type of network that institutions have. We, on the other hand, use a streaming technology. The files go from the modalities to a back-end server that in near real-time does all the rendering and 3D production, and we just stream the pixels. So it literally is an on-demand service, even over consumer-grade internet, and that's one of the key things that lets radiologists work from anywhere, including from home. They cannot tell the difference between being in the office and being at home, and that's on consumer-grade internet. And I don't believe any other product can actually offer that. In terms of the opportunities we won, some of these slides have been out before, but I think a few key things, the last 2 points at NYU Langone, that implementation was complete on time in June 2021. They're 100% live. We did say at the time we won this contract that we would be setting up a new R&D hub in New York, and that is going ahead. We were able to navigate around COVID restrictions in such a way that our people from Berlin or the person from Berlin is able to go to the US, and that will start later this month. So that project is going ahead and will be very exciting for us. In terms of LMU Clinicum, we won that deal in October, and the implementation was completed in December 2020. So we will receive a full half of revenue, although this is a slightly different model to the transaction-based one, but the revenue from this deal will be spread across the 5 years, and we will receive a full year's revenue from this in 2022. Zwanger Pesseri, this was an existing client. They renewed a five-year contract, so that was another key renewal for us. Then MedStar Health, and MedStar is an interesting one. It's technically it's called an IDN, a non-academic, I think interesting for a few reasons. One, it was the first client to take all three Visage products, that is our new worklist, our viewer and our archive, and it's 100% cloud-based. We think it's most probably the largest PACS implementation, 100% cloud-based, arguably anywhere in the world. And that implementation was completed towards the end of June, first week of July. And so, again, we will receive a full 12 months revenue coming into FY22. Intermountain Healthcare, the largest healthcare system provider in the Intermountain West region, Utah. It's based out of Salt Lake City in Utah. Multiple products, viewer and archive, and that is slated for implementation in the September-October timeframe this year. And then University of California, which we announced in February, this will be a staged implementation, a large five-campus implementation, cloud-based, and the first sites will be done in the first half of this year. So two of the five will be staged in this first half, and then another two in the second half of this year, and one about 12 months away from now. So that's all going on track. And the last one, which is University of Vermont, that will be done in this coming half. So effectively, we've had an interesting time in terms of implementations. We think one of our strengths is the ability to implement quickly. OSU was our first 100% remote implementation last August. We have now developed a highly optimized hybrid model, which is a mixture of on-site and remote. And we believe this has been a key differentiator. And certainly, I think we've been able to prove with the next slide that we were able to keep up our implementations despite changing restrictions because of COVID in different jurisdictions. So, as mentioned, Ohio State in August was our first 100% remote. Northwestern in May of this year was on-site. NYU Langone was 100% remote. And MedStar, a hybrid, where we had a team on-site plus a team remote. And we believe that is most probably the model we will use. It's the most optimized model going forward. And it's worthwhile mentioning that there are a number of other smaller sites that we did in background over this period. So in terms of implementations, it was by far our busiest 12 months ever. Just moving forward, one of the key factors we think that supports our pricing model, which is, you know, at a premium price, is that we have a proven ROI, and I think it's not just in terms of financial ROI, but certainly proven superior clinical capabilities, which for these institutions is critically important. This is a slide talking about a certain way of looking at implants in the ureter, and on the bottom here, Eric Pepin says some PACS visage imaging, you're able to do this. It takes just a few seconds, because in most other systems it could take minutes. And I think this is a perfect example of clinical ROI. Moving forward, the growth strategy, again, we believe we've delivered on this, and it's been consistent. We have expanded our footprint. We have had existing clients grow their transactions. Our new product offerings, particularly Archive and Worklist, are starting to kick goals. We did have a second major sale in Europe, and we are leveraging our R&D capability, which I'll show in just a minute. Pipeline, and we often get asked about this. Clearly, we had a lot of opportunities in the pipeline about a year ago. Those opportunities we've been able to convert to contract, but pleasingly, we've had a number of new opportunities come in as well, and there were opportunities that were in the pipeline over the last 12 months that have continued to progress. So we're very happy with not only the size, but also the mix of opportunities in the pipeline going forward. I think things that will help us in terms of size of sale will be the newer products like Visage Open Archive, And as we said, three of the recent sales were both viewer and archive. And we think that will be a trend that will continue. Not everybody will buy archive from the get-go, but, you know, we are seeing an increased number, which is positive. Worklist, our newest product. As I said, we've had this in production in some smaller sites. The first large-scale client to go live with it was MedStar, and that's been very successful. It can be implemented on-premise or in cloud. And I think the important thing is it provides us with flexibility for those clients that wanted, like MedStar, that just wanted to deal with one vendor. We were able to do it by having the Worklist component. And I think we are seeing it more and more in the mix with opportunities in our pipeline. Enterprise imaging, the ability to move the product outside radiology. We are progressing with that. If there was any of our initiatives that maybe got put a little on the back burner because of COVID, this was the one, but we are starting again with some of our academic clients. We don't yet have a material implementation across a whole hospital, but again, we believe we are progressing in the right direction with this. And, you know, we're hopeful within the next 6 to 12 months to make some more headway in this regard. Visage in the cloud, I won't go into it too much, but clearly we see this as a huge strategic advantage. We are 100% cloud native. You know, a number of our opportunities, recent ones, are cloud based. As I said, we already have large implementations in there. UCs, Intermountain, UVM will all be cloud based. And certainly we're seeing a lot more cloud focused RFPs coming through and opportunities where cloud is important to these large scale operations. And the fact that we already have a number of large clients fully implemented, we think will stand us in good stead with those. Finally, I'll finish off with AI and the accelerator. Many of you would have seen this. It is a unique end-to-end solution, and it supports both research and production. It is based on our Visage 7 technology. It's a sandbox version of it. We do offer this to key academics, and the main thing is, as its name implies, it allows them, it provides the glue for these academic institutions to be able to take concept to product in a fraction of the time that would otherwise occur. So we see it as part of an ecosystem. We have an open API that will allow our third party and Visage develop algorithms to work inside the Visage Viewer rather than as a separate product that's not integrated. And we are looking at joint development and commercialization opportunities. Here's our team that leads our AI research, Malte Westerhoff, who's one of the co-developers and founders of Visage Imaging, co-developer of the platform, Detlef Starling, who's the other co-developer, and Ming Delin, who's based out of Yale but is our clinical research manager in North America. And we will be building that team further, given that we have got some new agreements. So in addition to the work we've been doing with Yale, we did sign two very important collaboration agreements, one with NYU Langone and recently with Mayo Clinic. The one for Mayo is for all of their campuses, Rochester, Phoenix, Arizona, and in Florida. And finally, proof that the AI accelerator works. We developed our first diagnostic AI algorithm in conjunction with the breast imaging team at Yale. It provides an on-the-fly in virtual real-time assessment of breast density. We did receive, it was previewed at RSNA 219 as works in progress, and we got FDA approval in 2021 February. It is implemented in one of our academic clients, and we're just assessing how and when they use it, and then we will be looking to offer it commercially to other clients. So we see that particular project as a model for future AI development. Finally, this occurred last week. It shows the New World Order. It's the HIMSS conference in Las Vegas. It was meant to be in February, got postponed, and I only show it because we did get registrants, but it is strange at a conference to see everybody all wearing face masks. And I think that will be the same for the RSNA later this year in November. And on that, thank you all and open it up to questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question via the phone, you will need to press the star key followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to ask a question via the webcast, please type your question into the Ask a Question box. Your first question comes from Peter Michelbrook with Select Equities. Peter, your line is open.
Hi, guys. Sorry about that. I just want to ask about renewals. I think Sutter was sort of due for renewal at some stage, but obviously they had their difficulties. Just want to see if there's any update there and also any of the other ones, which ones are coming up for renewal this year.
Yeah, look, Sutter's still progressing. We have made some good progress with them. As you mentioned, they got particularly badly hit by not only COVID, but by bushfires and everything else. So we decided to give them some breathing space. That opportunity is, a closed-door discussion with us. It's not gone out to market. And we're hopeful to have, something within the next few months, but it could be earlier than that.
Right. And which other ones are up for renewal this year? Sorry?
Allegheny was the other one that was due during this period, and that has been renewed.
Right, okay. Can I just ask, you've made the comment around just how busy you have been in terms of implementations and sales, obviously, but particularly in terms of implementations, has it actually required any additional staffing to do that? And also the other part, what with people sort of tied up on the implementations, does that impact the sort of the R&D or the rest of the business at all?
The answer is we've not hired specifically for any of these implementations. So I think the answer for that is no. It hasn't. We haven't just gone out and hired 5 or 6 people. I think we've hired 1 or 2, but that's our normal sort of cadence that we do every year. Clearly, there has been, a big R&D effort in all the work lists because it's the first major implementation and first cloud, but it hasn't prevented us from continuing with other projects and some of the AI work and also the product releases. So, I think we've weathered it, gone through it incredibly well, and the fact that we've got 4 out of the 7 already behind us, even with COVID, and, there were some juggling around that, working out, and we've optimised our capability to deliver remotely. And as I said, in the interviews, we've developed this hybrid model, which we actually think, even in a post-COVID world, would most probably be the most optimised. So it just makes it more efficient again. But we've just hired the normal amount over the last 12 months.
Okay. And finally, just on the enterprise imaging sort of opportunity there, appreciate that's still, as you said, sort of was sort of a little bit on the back burner, et cetera. But, I mean, how should we be thinking in terms of the size of an enterprise imaging sort of opportunity versus just the sort of the radiology, I guess, in general terms?
Look, it depends on the department. So if they do department by department, some are bigger, like cardiology is roughly 25-30%, depending on the hospital, of radiology. So it depends which one you get and what the institution's focus is, because some of them are better known for one area than another, and clearly that would be a bigger opportunity. It's hard to tell because a lot of this is photo and video or reflective light. Most institutions don't know how many images they've got because these are, just taken not as part of a sequence of an order, as we call it. They're taken just as the patients present. So it's a little hard to tell, but we think if you had everything other than radiology and outside pathology, it would be an additional 30-50%, depending on the institution.
Right, great. Okay, thanks, Sam.
Your next question comes from Sarah Mann with Moelis Australia.
Hey, Sam. It's David Mann stepping in for Sarah Mann. I just have a couple of questions. Firstly, a lot of the hospitals had a tough year financially with the elective procedures being delayed. Have you seen any impact of how some hospitals are thinking about new spend on technology, for example, slowing down of sales cycles? And then just following up on that, have you seen any of your hospital customers, especially the larger and better capitalised, being opportunistic in the M&A front to acquire some of these impacted hospitals? And if so, what kind of volume uplift have you seen, if any?
Yeah, look, on the first one, we haven't seen an impact. As I said, the exam numbers, which is the metric we charge on, did go down in March, April last year because people didn't know what to do with COVID. Everybody was, literally just shut down everything. But thankfully, it reopened up fairly quickly, and we have seen pre-COVID numbers in some cases even better. And when we looked at them, some were, in the early part, a little bit of catch up for the tests that weren't done during the shutdowns. But we are seeing organic growth back, and it's quite healthy. So at least the groups that we deal with, that hasn't been an impact. And clearly on the sales cycle, it's been the opposite. We've had our busiest year ever. And all of that was in COVID. So I think from our perspective, if anything, COVID's been a bit of a tailwind. In terms of the smaller ones, yes, look, there has been some M&A. It hasn't been major, but all of that would help. I can't really quantify it other than we do see the big always buying some of the smaller ones, and we saw that, the previous year. We saw it with Carl, we saw it with Mass General. To us, that's all positive because we get those additional transactions, but we see that business as usual. But we haven't had one where there was this massive, M&A where it would add, 60 or 70% to our volumes, but we live in hope.
Perfect. That's great. And then just one last question. With the RSNA moving online last year, I'm just trying to get a better feel for how you expect it to look this year and how we should think of marketing costs versus a normal year.
They've said it's in person. That 100% for sure. Unless something changes, we think marketing costs will come back. It won't be as much as previous years because we won't send as big a team. There will be restrictions, face masks. They've said no vaccination, don't come. So we expect the crowds maybe to be a little bit more focused, maybe not as many Europeans as we would otherwise get. But some of that expense will come back, and that's why we think, the 63% margin, EBIT margins, will most probably come back a bit, but we don't think it'll go back to what it was pre-COVID.
Perfect. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Josh Kanarakis with Barrenjoey.
Hi, Sam and Clayton. Hope you're well. Just a quick question on the on your cloud product. I'd love to get a little bit more context around out of the pipeline and RFPs, just how many of them are discussing public cloud deployment as an option. And maybe you could give some comment post the recent HIMSS conference around where the competitor set are in terms of their current cloud capabilities. Thanks.
Yeah, look, off the top of my head, I would say roughly 50% are talking cloud. And bear in mind, in some of the opportunities that we've contracted, one in particular, when we first started dealing with them, cloud was sort of in the background. It was going to be an on-premise till they sort of looked at it all and then went, yeah, we're going cloud. So roughly 50%, could be a tad higher. So there's definitely a momentum swing towards cloud. I think in terms of competitors, we only know what we hear. We don't believe anybody else is cloud native. In other words, they can put their entire application in the cloud and it work in exactly the same way as it would work on premise. So we think that's a very strong advantage. And we now have, a number of cloud implementations, material ones under our belt. And in the case of MedStar, all three applications of ours are 100% in the cloud. In that case, it's Google GCP. But and the other thing about cloud is we're agnostic. So some of our opportunities are in AWS. We believe some will be in Microsoft Azure. So we will have examples in every one of the three big clouds. We wouldn't use a second-tier cloud provider. So I think as far as we can tell, we're the only ones that can state we have a full implementation 100% in the cloud. And with UCs and Intermountain, we'll have more, and UVM will have more.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Intermountain, I imagine that'll probably be one of the largest sort of public cloud rollouts, you know, in North America, maybe globally. Like, I guess I'm interested in your view around whether you're doing much outbound marketing or what the sort of funnel of inquiry has been specifically around, you know, cloud. And just, you know, I'm just interested in terms of, especially relevant to some of that more mid-market, whether that opens up that opportunity for you in a greater capacity.
Oh, look, I think it was a key theme at HIMSS. You know, that was just in Las Vegas last year. It's the conference that all the three cloud providers go to as well, so that dovetailed nicely. Look, UVM is more in that mid-tier in terms of volume, so there's a perfect example that used to be completely on-premise and just went, no, we're going to cloud. And definitely it has opened up opportunities, but not just in the mid-market. There's certain, large health institutions that are now saying we're not IT companies, we're healthcare providers, and so they have a cloud first strategy, and that plays nicely into what we're doing. But certainly we are making it well known. I mean, that's what you'd expect us to do. And as I said, not everybody's cloud, and those that go on premise may in a year or two, you know, migrate to cloud or migrate their archive to cloud. So it's certainly a huge part of our strategy, and so far it's working well.
Great. And just a quick question on your AI commercialization with some of your partners in the market there. I'd love to just get an update in terms of, you know, how we should be thinking about, you know, the timing and pipeline of any other, you know, products that could be, you know, lodged into FDA or brought to market on, you know, the next sort of 2 to 3 year time horizon.
Yeah, look, it depends on the organization. Most of them already have projects where a lot of what I call the science or the research is already underway. And in those instances, you know, with Accelerator, we are the glue that sort of fast tracks that process. And so you may find that they complete the science and we do the FDA and what I call productize it. In other words, how you make it a product that's supportable and distributable, and then we commercialize it. So those would be maybe a little bit more near term, you know, it could be 12, 18 months, could be less, just depends on FDA and, you know, how big a product it is. Those where we would do the science, or it would be joint science, could also be somewhere in that time frame. Some could be longer. It really just depends on the project. But I think there are a few projects that are, you know, further down the track simply because they've done the science but don't have the wherewithal to make a product and put it through FDA. And if, you know, if that works for us and works for them, then we'd be able to pick the ball up at that point and do it relatively quickly compared to the rest of the market. So, you know, we're saying it's not just here and now. These are longer-term projects, but they're not 5 years away. They're hopefully 12 to 24 months away.
Your next question comes from the webcast. Will Hauser at Escala asks, are your margins expanding with new revenue and contained grow in costs? Can you comment on profit margin, please?
Yeah, and I'll it's Clayton here, I'll answer that. Our margins expanded with a little bit of both, you know, obviously new revenue coming through. Some of the contained costs were more to do with the marketing and the conference costs obviously not appearing in this financial year. As Sam mentioned, that's like, or will come back within, November or the first half of this, the FY22 financial year. So revenue has been the main driver of that margin expansion, coupled with the decrease in costs for advertising. Clearly, as we look into FY22, we think that some of those costs will start coming back for the conferences. But it'll be some of the revenue that we get from the new contracts coming on board for NYU, Northwestern, and Intermountain Mountain and MedStar will start helping that normalise. So we think the margins, it's had a bit of a step change in terms of where it's gone from mid 50s to over 60. We think of it, with some additional costs with advertising and also setting up of the NYU R&D office expenditure there, they'll start to normalise.
Will Hauser with a Scholar also asks, can you comment any further traction in Europe outside the German hospital previously announced?
Look, our commentary around Europe is it's unfortunately not one country. It's a whole lot of countries, and each one has a different health system and, more importantly, different funding for health. We think outside Germany, the larger countries with more sophisticated health systems are looking at a different way of buying their technology. They're looking more towards the American model. So, our commentary is Europe's a few years behind. It tends not to buy components like us, hasn't in the past, and cloud hasn't been prevalent. We're seeing it more and more, I think, in the UK in particular and parts of Europe. So we think it will be incremental. It'll take a little longer. We think cloud will be a key part of it going forward. Now, there's some regulatory things around cloud and, things to do with the EU and data protection and cloud providers being American, but clearly that needs to be worked through by the cloud providers. But once it does, we think that will open some opportunities. So Europe, we're looking at it. It will be more incremental and take a look, it'll be more stepwise than what's happened in the US.
Michael Legg with Michael Legg and Associates asks, what stops the competition changing to pixel-based communications like Visage?
Yeah, good question. It's something, this platform was developed back in 2009, and obviously we've enhanced it. But a few things. One, it's proprietary, so it's all in-house. So we didn't use someone's toolkit, get 80%, and then modify the last 20%. It's 100% proprietary and in-house. The second thing is it's not just one technology. We talk about the streaming because that's the easiest one to try and explain, a bit like, Netflix for radiology, but a bit more sophisticated. But there are a lot of other technologies in and around what we do because it is two-way communications and you can't have any jerkiness in it, because the minute you have any jerkiness or hesitation in the image flow, radiologists will just go, sorry, can't use it, because they think they're missing something. And so there's certain technologies that try and optimize the streaming based on bandwidth, which keeps changing even on the best network, every half second or so. So I suppose a few things to that question. It's proprietary. We didn't leave a roadmap. And they can't get a head start by just getting someone's toolkit and trying to put it together. A number have tried. Haven't been successful. And then the last thing is, the best form of defence is attack. So we are, putting the foot down in terms of R&D and bringing out new features and new capability all the time. So we're making ourselves harder to catch. So as I said, at this point, we don't know anybody that has been able to bring out a platform that one-for-one competes with ours. And I think, and that doesn't mean one day they may not do something that's, half as capable or three quarters or equivalent, that we just don't know. But at this point, we haven't seen anything similar in the market. And I think the fact that we're winning, the lion's share of the, large public opportunities must probably support that.
Will Hauser with a Scholar asks, are existing contracts being renewed on the old terms, or are you managing to upsell improved terms when renegotiating new contracts?
Yes, we've only had a few that have renewed, and some have either been for additional volumes or increases in exam rate. Clearly, when we first started selling Visage, the exam rate has increased some 65-70%. But some of the existing customers obviously pushed into that price. We haven't done that on a per exam basis, but there's somewhere in between. So we've been able to negotiate an exam rate that's fair and reasonable for both parties, but to bring it more in line.
Jason Yin with Lincoln Funds asks, are you able to comment on the lift in other financial assets to $19.8 million, especially unlisted investments in managed funds?
Yeah, so the other in financial assets have been investments of our cash holdings. So we've taken it out of pure cash and term deposits and put it into some other financial assets or investments. The main reason to have done that in the fixed income securities is to enhance our returns for those available funds that they're on. In terms of where they're positioned, we give those to some consultants that put them into the listed and unlisted entities, and mainly due to get those enhanced returns.
Claude Walker with A Rich Life asked, could you please tell us whether you have lost any opportunities that were previously in the pipeline?
No, that's the short answer. There are some opportunities that we don't get a look at, and thankfully they're not many. But any of the opportunities where we've had a chance to compete, and when I mean compete, it is go through an RFP process, do demonstrations to the radiologists, and then, you know, often there'll be a pilot or proof of concept where you have them use it with their own data. In that regard, in terms of material opportunities, no. Now, there have been one or two over the years where we haven't even got to the starting line. We don't get the RFP, or, you know, we get, you know, the minute they do an RFI and say, well, what are your price? They say, well, we can't. We're not going to progress with that. But as I said, thankfully, they're few and far between. So nothing in the pipeline that we've competed on that has dropped out to a competitor at this point.
Julian Mulcahy with ENP asks, when do you expect to receive revenue from the Breast AI algorithm?
We're hopeful that based on how it's going, well, we've got it in situ in a large academic, and it's going really, really well. I would tend to think, you know, realistically, second half FY22, possibly first half 23, but that would stretch it out. So I think we'll get our first taste of some revenue, hopefully second half of this financial year.
Julian also asks, what is driving the large increase in receivables?
Yeah, Julian, there's a number of factors for that. One is we're actually doing more revenue, so exam-based revenue at the end of every quarter. So to the end of June, we have higher volume, so more customers, more volume. So that's part of the reason. The other one is timing of implementations. We, as Sam mentioned, we had finished implementations for NYU, Northwestern and MedStar, including data migration for MedStar towards the end of June. So that helped drive that trade receivables, most of which is in the 0 to 30 days. So that's, you know, when a lot of the invoicing got done for some of those.
Ian Lee with Allianz Global Investors Hong Kong says, Sam, any indication on the number of bids you're engaging on now? Also in Europe, any insights into the momentum?
Ian, we don't normally give out the numbers of opportunities, and sometimes actual numbers can be a little misleading because you could have two small ones equal a fifth of a really big one. I think the important thing for us is not only is there a good quantum in terms of exams, because that's how we size each opportunity, it's across a whole range of market segments. Because I know, you know, you see my slide where, you know, 9 out of the top 20 and everybody thinks that's all we do, but it's not. We have, you know, really good sales in what we call the IDN, non-academic space. So, you know, last year, things like, you know, MedStar in the mountain, which is huge, but non-academic. And so we look at it both in terms of which markets it's in, and we're looking at things in the for-profit, private, academic, non-academic. So, you know, we're pretty pleased with the spread, good spread, cloud, non-cloud. And then the other trend, which is, you know, really important for us, is there's an increasing number that are looking at taking more than one product from us from the get-go. So clearly the total contract value gets padded out by these additional products, and that can be quite material. So the comment on the pipeline is, you know, we're happy with it, and we think it's a great mix across multiple markets and multiple types of opportunities. In terms of Europe, I think really, as I mentioned before, each opportunity is smaller because Europe tends to have regional hospitals, like the one in Munich is the biggest hospital in that area, but there's only one campus, whereas in America they tend to spread across regions like Mayo in 3 or 4, et cetera. So, in terms of pipeline, clearly majority of it's North American at this stage, and we will see more and more European, particularly as cloud starts to be more prevalent.
Ian also says, in Australia, are there any views in changing the contract to more software as a service based?
Well, in terms of the risk product, that's what we did with Primary. It's a per transaction. They bought the whole thing based on that. So I think that was, you know, we used the same model we used in the US. Certainly if we sell, Visage 7 to any of the, you know, more material clients, which we live in hope, as we say, but, you know, obviously we think we've got a good story there, that would be on a SaaS model as well. So we are bringing it in where they're new sales. Clearly, if a client has been with us long-term, like iMed, which we've been servicing on and off for different parts of it for years, if they've already had the old model where they paid up front for the licenses, then, you know, we're keeping that model, but new work we're doing on SaaS.
Gary Sheriff with RBC says, morning, Sam and Clayton. Are you able to provide us with rough timing for likely sale of Visage into new departments outside of radiology? Is it likely in FY22 or FY23 or later? Thank you, Gary Sheriff.
Gary, I think, second half 22, beginning 23, is feasible. Clearly it just depends on the institution and their needs, but we would hope to at least, you know, have something in that time frame. You know, look, it could stretch out further, but, you know, I'm optimistic, end of 22, beginning of 23, if everything goes according to plan, we would have something.
Adam Jasek with Jasek Invest is interested to hear what you see is the future of your AI breast density application. Do you see the future market as broad public health screening or targeted healthcare via institutions that have already installed, or will you install your offerings?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the first phase will be for, you know, to sell it back to our existing user base because, you know, we're already there. All Visage systems are the same, so that you just need to drop the algorithm in. It's not a bespoke implementation for any one client. It's very easy to deploy. And we have a material user base, you know, and a growing user base that would make that strategy worthwhile in its own right. Is there anything that stops us from deploying it to non-Visage clients? No, but I think that would be a second stage.
Panos Rodriguez asked, does the breast density AI require radiologists to confirm the report or the FDA has approved the release of the result without a radiologist? Plus, have you sought approval from the Australian regulators read this AI system after getting approval from the FDA?
Yeah, I'll answer the second part first. We do have TGA and CE approval as well as FDA. FDA was the last. So the answer to that is yes. I think you need to, in the US, in most states, comment on breast density for every mammogram or breast tomosynthesis. So that is just one part of the clinical report. So does it need the radiologist to look at it and comment on it outside AI? Most probably not, but that doesn't give the full report that you need for the mammogram. So radiologists would be looking at the images anyway. There are other applications for, so from a density point of view, no, the radiologist doesn't have to comment on, the algorithm can. And the accuracy and consistency of it, we're incredibly pleased with. But it has other applications. So, you know, when the technologist actually does the exams, they can actually find out about the density, because that, if the breasts are dense, then it sets in train additional tests like an ultrasound or an MR, and they will know that at the point of actually taking the images. They don't have to interrupt the radiologist. The radiologist look at them, comment on them, and then they go back. So the application is not just, is it something less for the radiologist to do? I suppose the answer to that is yes, but it has a lot of other applicability inside the sort of whole workflow of how the patient goes through the practice.
Michael Legg with Michael Legg and Associates asked, has there been any consideration of PACS for digital pathology histology?
Look, it's something that, you know, we do get asked. The platform's very suitable for it. And, you know, the people in Berlin actually have a lot of expertise, because originally we had a division called Amira that, you know, did a lot of electron microscopy and analysis of those images and, you know, those digital slides, which is very sort of is very akin to what's done in pathology. It is a possibility. It's not on the absolute near-term roadmap, but that's not to rule it out, because, you know, the platform's as well suited to that as it is to radiology going forward.
Curtis Larson with North Capital asked, do you see any demand for multi-cloud capability within a customer where their data can sit on different public clouds at all?
Absolutely. So, you know, what normally happens is that, you know, the client will have their data and that will be replicated in, as part of the cloud provider's storage in multiple instances in different locations. So that's quite standard. So we do object storage and they're replicated as part of the standard. Some clients will then look to actually have that data made immutable. So, you know, it can't be changed because the images are the images, and store those as a backup in a completely different cloud provider. So, you know, it's really a matter of, you know, what each client wants, but certainly to me that makes a lot of sense, because that's the ultimate in disaster recovery and we do support that.
Daniel Goldberg with Select Equities says, where is the competition? It seems that closed room renewal discussions means that competition remains desultory.
Cool. Look, as I said, I think, you know, when we have closed room discussions, it means the client is happy with us, because when they're unhappy, they go back out to market, and we haven't had that. It's purely in terms of pricing and, you know, in terms of length of contract. So I think it's a clear indication that we're doing our job, because if we weren't, they would go back out to market. So, you know, our aim is for none of our clients to ever go back out to market. And clearly the only way we can do that is make sure the product still remains the best and that we provide the service that they expect. And so thankfully in these instances, I believe we have. So, you know, that's why it's closed door.
Scott Williams with Team Invest says, hi, Sam. Can you please comment on the board's approach to succession planning?
Yeah, look, it is a big topic for us as we get bigger and, frankly, I get older. But, we have started new people and culture committee. We have part of that role is not just remuneration but clearly succession planning and what they call building the bench. You know, we've had a great expansion in our market share, and we've been able to do that with the resources we've got. But clearly we need to look at, you know, what's over the horizon, particularly with these new opportunities. So you know, suffice to say, it is one of the two key areas that our board is looking at, and obviously it's an iterative process over time.
Bart Walker with A Rich Life says, is Visage Worklist simply elements of the Australian RIS product repackaged? Can you talk about the differences between Visage Worklist and the Australian RIS? And can you please give us a feel for how many clients in the USA are using the Worklist product?
Yeah, it's not the same, and there are technical reasons. I won't go into why it's not the same, but it has the same DNA. So clearly, Malte Westerhoff, our global CTO, oversees the risk development as well, and a lot of the functionality and concepts we have in our Worklist in the Australian risks are replicated in the US opportunity. It's a slightly different technology stack. It's more using a similar stack to the Visage 7, and, you know, again, I won't go into all the bits and bytes, but, you know, it's different, but it has the same DNA. We now have, I think, over four clients using the Worklist, three that are smaller and growing, and clearly Intermountain, which is the last one, which is large. So it's sort of pretty much, you know, at that fully hardened commercial point. And so anyone else of any size that wants to use it, we're pretty well guaranteed that it will be applicable. So, look, it's an important, you know, arrow in our quiver. And as I said, it just allows us to provide flexibility and address, you know, a broader range of opportunities. And so, you know, we're really pleased we have it on deck and live so that people can see it.
Thank you. We will now move back to questions from the telephone. Your next question comes from Chris Cooper with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Apologies if this has been asked. I joined the call a bit late. I just wanted to ask on the renewal profile. I know you've got WellSpan, I believe, coming up in the relatively near future. Can you just give you your updated expectations on that process, please? And also just an update on where you are with the renewal profile across the rest of the contract base. And then secondly, just curious to get your latest thoughts on TAM. It's probably the single most frequent conversation we have with investors on this company. And look, I think the perceived wisdom is really for an addressable market around 2 to 3 billion US. Clearly, there's several reasons why that number might be different now. I'd just be really curious to hear your latest thoughts on the total opportunity and I guess your potential trajectory from here. Thank you.
Do you want to address the first question? I'll do the second.
In terms of renewals, we spoke about Allegheny has renewed. Sato, we're still going through the process, but these are closed negotiation in terms of that Sato renewal. WellSpan, as you rightly mentioned, Chris, is about 12 months away. We haven't started those conversations yet, albeit just to indicate that the contract is running to an end, but we're confident that will, you know, hopefully remain closed door negotiations as well, and continue, you know, running the process. They haven't indicated that they would be going to market, so we hope that continues. In terms of TAM, Sam, do you want to address that?
Yeah, look, traditionally the TAM was just looked at as radiology and they called it PACS. And I think the VISTA has widened significantly because applications like ours can move into different ologies. So that's one thing. And I think people are looking at whole of hospital viewing review, which is not as, you know, not as many dollars in it, but there's more to that. There's the archive, which some people included in PACS, but, you know, there were separate VNAs, which was a different market. That's part of the TAM. And then there's all the new stuff like reflective light, photos becoming a huge part of the medical record. In other words, I think more and more, if you look at the record over time, it's less alphabetic numeric or less text and a lot more image, which is part of the TAM. And then, of course, there's the whole question around AI and radiology and what that addressable market is, because it's all related to what we do. And I think you know, I think the addressable market is large, but I don't think anyone has an accurate figure on it. So I think the TAM is expanding, not contracting, and I think it's for those multiple reasons.
Appreciate the thoughts. Thank you.
Your next question comes from John Hester with Bell Potter.
Hi, Sam. Good morning, guys. Sam, just on your strategy going forward, you've obviously got a very large business here in the US now, highly priced or highly rated stock. You know, where are you guys sitting in terms of thoughts on acquisitions, potentially of additional complementary technologies to spread beyond your area of just radiology imaging?
Yeah. Look, there are a few things there. I think one thing we're doing is, you know, it's a question of build or buy. And, you know, on the building side, we're you know, with the new R&D center in New York starting later this month and the, you know, research collaboration, that's more on the build side. It's partnering but building, so we're not doing it all ourselves. And then the question around, and so there'll be some investments in those, but then the question around buy. Look, I think we've been consistent. Our preference is we don't look to buy market share, and we haven't. It's more around adjacencies, and I think some of the areas at the moment, we, particularly around AI capability, we struggle with evaluations. I think there's a lot, you know, a fair amount of blue sky in them that when we look at it and put it in a spreadsheet, just, you know, we understand it's not linear, but we don't see that, we can't see it working out. But look, that landscape is changing. I think some of the VC-funded AI companies are starting to run out of a bit of runway because it's taken a lot longer to commercialize, and then you've got to go through the whole contract cycle with clients and liabilities and PHI and all the things we have to do. So, look, we're looking, no question. And, you know, we do get propositions from various, you know, investment banks from time to time. And, you know, if we keep looking long enough, I'm sure something will pop up. I think the main thing is also we want to be very selective for two reasons. We don't want to get distracted and defocused because we've got a lot of opportunities. And more importantly, we believe we can reach our growth targets organically. But, you know, it would be silly of us, and we're not doing it. We're not closing our eyes to M&A. And, you know, if we can find something, you know, that we think we can add value to because of our technology and our user base, we'd certainly look at it.
Okay. And just in relation to FY22, you probably won't answer this, but I'll ask it anyway. Consensus revenues are sitting at around $90 million. Sort of got any thoughts on that, Sam? You comfortable with that, or just prefer not to comment?
Clayton, did you want to?
I mean, we've looked at those, John, and think that that's reasonable. Obviously, with some of the wins we've had in the implementation, I think it encounters that we'll need to win a small amount of contracts for this year and implement, and clearly the timing of those. So I don't think it's outlandish in terms of the trajectory and where we are from here, but clearly it needs to play out in some of the contract wins.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll hand the conference back to Dr. Sam Hupert for any closing remarks.
Well, everybody, thank you for joining us, and thanks for your questions. Appreciate it very much, and thank you once again. That's about it.